From us to you at Christmas time, Christmas is... It's Christmas Eve, and it's good to be home, safe, free, surrounded by love. The tree is lighted, the mantle is decorated with hollyberry, pine, and candles, and there's a perky red ribbon tied on the wreath above. The night is silent. The fire is warm, and the youngsters have a light in their eyes you just don't see at any other time of the year, and so I guess do Mom and Dad. Soon now it will be Christmas. This is Carl Grayson, and on this very special night, we'd like to share with you a few of the many things Christmas is. The tree, the wreath, the candles. Could even be a spacecraft high in the sky with the Earth as bright as a silver balloon. We very much believe it's the love expressed in a letter from a father to his two young sons. Christmas Eve. May we stay with you for a while in your home? See it the first thing when you enter the room. The Christmas tree. Sparkling, symbolic, magical. It's an old, old tradition of the holiday season, the tree. And one of the favorite stories of its beginnings recounts how Martin Luther, walking through the forest one cold, clear Christmas Eve, was struck by the silence of the night, the bright stars in the sky, and the simple beauty of the trees around him. He cut one of them, a small pine tree, carried it home and trimmed it with candles to impress the children with the divine power that had gloriously brightened the Nativity. And so it may have begun, the tradition of the Christmas tree. And through the years, this symbol of Christmas has inspired many a story. One of them, The Fir Tree, by Denmark's Hans Christian Andersen. Here we have a little fir tree stuck upright in a tub filled with sand. But the tub didn't look like a tub because a green cloth was hung all around it, and it stood on a large, bright carpet. Strange place for a tree to be, and the tree was frightened. What was going to happen? Decoration, that's what. Several young ladies, aided by servants, did the job. On one branch, they hung little nets of colored paper and filled them with sugar plums. Candles and a large star of gold tinsel were added. And for a brief, shining time, the tree stood in all its glory. But the tree kept wondering so much what was going to happen next, and worrying about it, that he really didn't have time to enjoy himself. And then, when he was taken down and tossed outside into the winter, he sadly said, "Ah, 'tis over. How I wish I had been happy when I had reason to be." The Story of the Little Fir Tree, by Hans Christian Andersen. And in it may be a worthwhile thought for all of us. The Christmas wreath above the mantle and the flickering candles on the mantle itself. Many stories and legends surround them. Long, long ago, medieval Christians believed that on Christmas Eve, the Christ child wandered through the villages and the countryside, searching for those who believed in him. On that night, then, the good people placed candles at their windows to guide the child through the darkness to their homes. And as the custom and legend continued through the years, the candle took on another significance, for it welcomed any stranger who might be drawn to the door by its flickering light. And of the Christmas wreath, there are many legends concerning it. Now, this is one we especially like. It tells of a young girl of Bethlehem who wept because she had nothing to bring the Christ child but a crown of holly leaves. She went nonetheless to the manger and knelt by the crib. The tiny babe touched the crown of holly leaves, and suddenly the leaves gleamed and scarlet berries appeared where the young girl's tears had fallen. And so came into being the Christmas wreath. Kids at Christmas. As usual, they manage to tell it as they see it. And that's part of the fun of it all. Mistletoe, said one little boy, that means to watch out for slobbery girls. Two of his good friends added, a good thing to remember about standing under mistletoe is, don't. When discussing the Dickens' A Christmas Carol, one lad remarked, there's no such thing as a humbug, but it is old and grouchy when there is. Another observed, Tiny Tim grew up to be sort of a singer. And a little girl gave us the truth in these simple words. If I should say a Christmas carol, what I mean would depend on whether I said it in English or music. Then we have the young girl who said to her father, a star is for living in heaven when it is not for wearing in a Christmas tree's hair. And one last observation. This thought from a young student who was asked the question, who were the Druids and where did they live? And he answered, I don't remember, but whoever they are and wherever they live, I wish them a Merry Christmas. Kids at Christmas time. You can't always tell just by looking at a person how he really feels or thinks. Sometimes between the ears there's quite a wonderful world of imagination and make-believe. Which takes us back to the year of 1822 and a man who lived in New York City. He was a scholar who did some writing, and he was considered by many people to be rather an austere man, a strictly establishment individual. Certainly not the sort of man to get excited about any such thing as Christmas. An alert person, however, may have noticed now and then a twinkle in his eye that surely had to be, for though he did not smile often and was a stern parent, he was, beneath it all, one of those rare people who see beyond themselves into a colorful, fantastic world where anything can happen. And so there came that special Christmas time of 1822 when this usually predictable father surprised his children with a gift of words. Perhaps he read his story for the first time around a Christmas tree on Christmas Eve. If so, you can well imagine the wide-eyed children as they followed the report. Why, in just a few short hours it was all going to happen, when the house was quiet and everybody was fast asleep. Sleigh bells in the sky, 8 tiny reindeer, a round, fat, jolly old man with a red suit and flowing white beard. Magic. The Night Before Christmas was written by Clement Moore of New York City for his own children, 1822. A gift to all children for all time. Not bad for a practical man who is said to be a strictly establishment kind of individual. Thank you.
comes the night before Christmas, and all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. Children were nestled all snug in their wee little beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their wee little heads. Mama in her kerchief, Papa in his cap, had just settled down for a while.
Then what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and a tiny reindeer, with a little old driver so lively and quick that I knew right away that it must be St. Nick.
More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came. He whistled and shouted and called them by name.
Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer, now Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen.
To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall,
dash away, dash away, dash away, dash away all.
So up to the housetops the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys
and St. Nicholas too.
I heard on the roof all the clattering noise
of each galloping
hoof. All bundled in fur from his head to his foot, his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot.
I drew in my head and was turning around
when down the chimney he came with a bound.
The bags full of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a little old peddler.
His eyes, how they twinkled so gay.
His dimples, how merry were they.
His cheeks were like roses when kissed by the sun.
His nose like a cherry all wrinkled with fun.
His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow.
The beard on his chin was as white as the snow.
The stump of a little old pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke went around and around and around his head like a wreath. He was so jolly and fun, a right jolly old, jolly old elf. And I laughed and I laughed and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself.
He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly.
He gave me a wink of his eye and a twist of his head. A chuckle and a smile, I knew all the while I had nothing to dread.
He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work. He filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk. Finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod up the chimney he rose.
He sprang to his sleigh, to his team, gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle.
Christmas to all and to all.
won't come again for a year. The children are nestled all snug in their wee little beds, while memories of sugar plums dance in their wee little heads. Mama in her kerchief, Papa in his cap, are settled at last for a
Christmas Eve, and a father writes a letter to his two young sons, and what he has to say, well, I think it speaks for all dads and all mothers as they look to their children at Christmas time. Dear Dana and Matthew, it's Christmas Eve, and I have retreated to the room which your mother calls Dad's Word Factory. For the last few hours, in my own fumbling way, I've tried to help your mother wrap your Christmas toys, and they have now been placed under our tree to await your morning onslaught. Funny, but each year I tease Mother about the care with which she wraps each package. Well, we know how little boys handle pretty ribbons and paper. But she still treats each gift as if it contained gold bars. And maybe they do hold something just as valuable. Our love for both of you. When I finished my duties downstairs, I came up to your room and stood between your beds, barely able to see your faces in the soft glow of the nightlight. From below, I could hear, just faintly, Christmas carols from the kitchen radio. Suddenly, and without realizing it, I was on my knees. Driven there, I guess, by my doubts and fears that I'm not the father I should be. Now, I don't expect either of you to understand this letter, and the odds are great that you will never see it. But I wonder if we have given you the gifts that really count. Have we taught you to count your blessings, not only so that you will appreciate what you have, but will want to do something for those who have not? Have we taught you to be colorblind, so that you can look at a black, yellow, red, or brown child and see only a friend? Have we taught you to pray, and to pray only for guidance, because God can help you solve any problem if you let Him? Have we taught you never to quit in anything you do? For if you persist, you will eventually win. Have we taught you to share not only your possessions, but yourself, without any thought of acknowledgement or publicity? Have we taught you that the world is really a beautiful place, filled with beautiful people, in spite of what you see on television? Have we taught you that you can be anything you want to be if you're willing to pay the price to reach your goals? And most important, have we taught you how to love? I know you both tell us that you love us, and we tell you that we love you, but it's easy for us to love each other. What we hope is that you learn to love everyone. And that is the hardest job you will ever have, until you learn the secret. And the secret is so simple. All you must remember is that hate grows out of fear. If you are afraid someone is going to beat you in a fight, you immediately begin to hate him. When you grow older, if you're afraid someone is going to steal your job, your girl, or your business, you immediately begin to hate. Without that fear, there will never be hate. And without hate, it is easy to love. Our toughest task then, your mother's and mine, is to help both of you grow up without fear. And this we promise to do with every bit of our ability. Every child is a miracle, and so you are both miracles. And there is no room for fear or hate in a miracle. I prayed before I left your darkened room, and I was there so long that my eyes had become adjusted to the faint light so that I could see both of your faces. Because of this special night, I could look only at you, my boys, and think of another tiny boy who slept on this night for the first time nearly 2,000 years ago. He was not as warm as you, his bed was not as comfortable as yours, and his poor mother and father were frightened and alone in a strange town. And yet, I wouldn't be here in your room tonight and thinking these thoughts if it not had been for that small boy. And I cannot help but wonder what his dad was thinking about as he looked down on his sleeping face. If it is not sacrilegious, I want you both to know that I envy that other father, for he gave his son the gifts I hope we can give to you. One more thing. Children forget quickly. So you don't even talk about Grandpa Teddy anymore. You say he's dead when somebody asks you or mentions his name. But the last time we saw Grandpa Teddy was when we were driving away from his house 2 years ago. Just as we were leaving, he leaned into our car window and said to me, "Drive carefully. You've got a mighty precious cargo in the back." Only later, after he was gone from us, did I remember his remark. And now I think of it again, and remember all my boyhood Christmases when, no matter how tough the times, there was always a gift under the Christmas tree for his boys. You are both indeed my precious cargo. And I pray, God, that he helps me to guide you to manhood, and that he allows me the luxury of hanging around long enough to see you reach it. Merry Christmas, my sons. Dad. On behalf of the WGN family, this is Carl Grayson wishing you and yours a joyful Christmas and a very happy new year to come.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.